It's gonna be some stuff you're gonna see that's gonna make it hard to smile in the future. But through whatever you see, through all the rain and the pain, you gotta keep your sense of humor. You gotta be able to smile through all this bullshit.
All right, everyone, welcome to the March edition of In the Know. I'm Slip, and we have a newcomer in the house. We've got no more
Dimitri.
He was in a collision with a subway train.
He ran into his old homosexual lover, and they've been disappeared since. But why don't you go ahead and say hi, Pestilence?
Hi, how you doing? And if I ever drop out of this show, sure as hell hope you don't talk like that about me.
Oh, it's just a big joke.
Okay.
It's no big deal.
All right.
We do it about everybody here.
All right.
Just all fun.
Okay.
And JP?
Sup, my dogs.
And my fools. And we got VR.
Hola.
Hey, that was a good message, okay?
What message?
The beginning of that song.
I didn't understand 99%
I was thinking about cheeseburgers.
Zoning out.
I was just hearing all this tink, tink,
for all you guys that don't know that most people don't,
and I just
like rap.
So I just tuned it out because I thought it was my nephews playing with their noisy toys.
Such and sadness that there's no diversity amongst you.
Diversity?
Yeah,
I'll show you diversity.
Don't get on your high horse. We all listen to various forms of music and enjoy various forms of entertainment as much as the next guy.
No, actually, why I use that example is a couple of them were playing with their musical, you know, like child toys or 2 and 3, and just all of a sudden, I heard the riff from Brass Monkey, and just
that funky
break,
monkey.
Yeah, and had all to
right.
Brass Monkey.
That funky monkey.
Brass Monkey.
That funky monkey.
All right.
All right, we got
right
that
on.
Covered.
Okay.
All right, well, on to the
you
show.
You just have to like sing along with Brass Monkey.
That's how the show.
I'm
gonna
hold myself back.
Actually, I like Paul Revere a lot more.
Very proud of you.
Yeah. I like the whole bar thing and the gun show fight thing. That was fun. I like that. 10-4.
All
right.
Back to
so the show.
Somewhat form of pseudo quasi reality.
Oh, come on. We've never had that here.
Wanted to be talking. Right?
Microsoft Media Player logs choices. Not a good thing. Microsoft's new version of its popular Media Player software is logging songs and movies that customers play. The company said Wednesday it was changing its privacy statement to notify customers about the technology after inquiries from the Associated Press. Because everyone reads those privacy statements and before they press the OK box, right?
I can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
I do stuff just so
I can
read them.
I never actually press the OK button. I just read the privacy statement over and over.
Well, isn't that the coolest
and
thing?
And I save them.
Really? Copy and paste them and put it... same thing!
I have files. Like... 90% of my hard drive is full
of that. I think it's better than a Stephen King book any day. So the system creates a list on each computer that could be a treasure for marketing companies, lawyers, and others. What's a lawyer doing on my machine? Microsoft says it has no plans to sell the data collected by Media Player 8, which comes free, of course. Free, you get this utility that logs all this information about
really?
You.
Really?
It's crazy. And you get the privacy statement included.
Do I get
the
Super Hopper Chopper as well?
Well, if you order 2 free versions now... you'll get twice as much logging.
I'll tell you what a lawyer's doing.
Wow, where do I sign up? And I don't care how much it costs.
Yeah. He's looking at the MP3s you downloaded.
Yeah, pretty much.
Except he just wants to know where you found them.
Well, I don't know.
Sick one.
If you're watching DVDs or you don't want your wife to know about it, you might not give her your password, said David Colton, Microsoft's lead programmer manager for Windows Media. Programmer, more like exploiter. The new privacy policy was issued Wednesday. The Media Player has been bundled in a free edition to Windows for several years and allows users to play music, to CDs, DVDs, and movies, digitally stored songs on their computers. When CDs are played, the player downloads the disc name and titles for each song from a website licensed by Microsoft. The information is stored in a small file on each computer in the latest version of the software.
In fact,
you know what?
On an interesting note, I just recently bought a Microsoft Internet-capable keyboard. Comes standard with the software on the disk, the drivers.
Oh, yeah.
You install the drivers, bam, you got Media Player 8.
And you can even get, like, Internet Explorer. You know what's funny, too, is it goes along the same lines. Is like, Internet Explorer, when there's a new version that comes out, it'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep. You know what? I was just telling Dimitri before he get ran over by a subway train that...
And ran off with his lover?
At the same time. That I pretty much assume, like, unless I hear something else, like, none of these stories amaze me anymore. I pretty much assume anything I do online, anything I do on my network-compatible computer is going to be seen by somebody. Like, they're always logging everything. They're always exploiting. They're always selling it. I mean, you pretty much have to expect that. You're not going to have much security unless you're putting up mad firewalls and everything like that. I mean, pretty much expected. But
I feel the same. Sadly,
it becomes whatever you do is even more inefficient than, you know, doing it by pencil.
Yep.
But for all you crazy nerds like us, you could, of course, use another alternative operating system. Not even Linux. There's many other ones that aren't as bad as this. We're just trying to make the point that that kind of stuff sucks. And we just want to let you know about it. Here's another article. It says, why Linux will prevail. It's basically because Linux, I guess, has been doing more development in the desktop environment, which it is not as good as Windows. But I think it's got so many other points to it that may make up for it. But they're trying to please more people with it. The idea expressed in many articles that GNU Linux is good for servers but not for the desktop is a joke. In fact, Linux will prevail. Quite a few distributions of Linux desktop are close to becoming products that can successfully compete against Microsoft Windows. I was thinking about Dimitri.
Uh-huh.
It's about time. The last thing we need in an economy dependent upon proprietary tools to perform common computer functions. Linux systems are evolving at a rapid rate and can be expected to provide the first universal non-proprietary operating system and tool assortment for the average desktop user. If you haven't tried a recent Linux distribution, you will be pleasantly surprised as its evolution. The install of SUSE 7.3, Red Hat 7.2, or Mandrake 8.1, and Lycoris Desktop LX, I haven't heard of that, or Calder 3.1, is as easy as installing Windows. Recent Linux distributions with the KDE and GNOME desktops are so user-friendly that one might ask, who needs Microsoft Windows? Each system can be installed without harming Windows. Thus, the user can experiment with Linux while using Windows. I support disseminating Linux as freely as AOL does its CDs. Unfortunately, many computer users are unaware of the extent at which they are jerked around by companies that sell license restriction from restricting the freedom to use their software. To paraphrase open source advocate Richard Stallman, freedom includes the right to use the software as you want and the right to study how it works, the right to improve it, and the right to disseminate the product and improvements to others.
But also, wouldn't that include destroying it or making it worse?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's so many copies around that if you destroy it or make it worse, there's no danger of, you know, destroying the whole, basically.
Because it would have a very low fitness. It wouldn't, you know.
They'd say it sucks. Don't download it.
Great. Just wanted to make sure that the normal distribution of that was correct.
Yeah. I mean, one thing is, I'm going to go back to the article as a side note, though. I mean, it is something we're starting to use all the time now for everything. So we're going to want it our way. And we're going to get... It's kind of like
it's better than Burger King.
It's like a couch.
It's my way or the highway.
You know what I mean? Like, you buy these things for your house, you put them in your house.
Yeah.
And then when the couch, like, sends information off to how warm your butt is and how often you sit down on the couch, I mean, that's going to piss you off. So, I mean, I don't care if it's called Linux.
Well, especially if it's contradictory to the generalized other, what the value is of how much time you should spend on the couch or how warm your butt is.
Yeah.
Or if you're looking at pornography on your couch.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you were actually doing absolutely everything you thought you should be on the couch.
As Pestilence is right now.
You probably wouldn't be too pissed off at that, because you would just be reconfirming that you are the normal and very well-socialized human being that you are.
That's well explained.
This is an economic-driven capitalist society. All right. Big corporations have got to make their money some way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can be able to get into your computer in a legal fashion... to be able to collect data.
It could be a skewed legal. I mean, because I don't really think morally that would be correct, and we tend to base our laws off morals.
Actually, I said that wrong.
We should base our laws off morals.
Right.
It's actually more like we. The best way to do laws is to essentially structure the optimal functioning of society. So if you're outside the laws, you're not... being conducive to optimal production capabilities of you.
And then you're on cut.
That sounds like communism.
Oh, no, communism is...
No, because we have a free market.
No, I'm...
Well, actually, free market is all to reach equilibrium, which is essentially the optimal functioning state of the system.
Yeah.
Which is still capitalist.
But back to the source of the topic, all right, is we're talking about, you know, individuals, computer corporations, being able to bring in... you know, develop software that can gather information on how you use the software and what you do on the internet. All right.
And so they can better, you know, hone a product to fit your demand.
Right. And, I mean, whereas the user finds that intrusive, the company or the corporation involved or even the software developers find that to be a goldmine of information to be able to drive their product and be able to make the product.
Are you making a point? Are you explaining why they do what they do?
No, I'm trying to make a point. I mean, you have bashing on one side, but whoever hears the other side.
Yeah, but that's just the logistics. I mean, the corporation is going to do whatever it can get away with. If they can get away with, maybe there's some slight moral edge, like they won't kill people, but pretty much if they can get away with dumping toxic waste, and the rivers are going to do that until they get stopped.
Why?
They can get away with reading all your information, they're going to do it until somebody tells them they can't.
But see, why, you know, the intrinsic thing is, why is it that they dump waste? You know, because...
Cuts costs.
Right, and which develops more surplus value, which then increases their production capability because they can reinvest that in capital and then further exploit the worker or
let me explain
the consumer.
Is that, you know, we could probably do better economically with electric cars. Now, here's the two-sided coin. Is if we got rid of the gas and oil industry, we'd be putting a heck of a lot of people out of work, which essentially would be very, very bad. Mm-hmm. So there's a two-sided coin to that.
Right.
But with the operating system, the open license, open source, what's it called? Open source, not open license. Open source way of doing things, which is... me and you and everybody in this room could develop something, put it under the GPL license, which is just an open source license, and it says you can't take this product and turn it into a commercial product. It's free to develop. If you don't like it, somebody else can develop something else for it. You can build it on top of an operating system that allows that type of system to work, and you can change it yourself if you'd like.
Right.
So
the question
is, you can do that without killing tons of workers.
Right.
And that's what Microsoft's problem is that they're doing it. They're making lots of money still.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not broke.
Right.
So why do they need to keep doing things like this?
Right. But when it comes to the overall the independent software developer that goes ahead and creates a better version of the software that he's currently using because that's what he wants and that's what people he knows wants.
How does he know that that's what they want?
Well, I mean, like, he knows them. I mean, he works with them.
Well,
I
this is just trying
phone call
this, this kind of information, the drawing of this personal information from utilizing the software. I'm not done yet.
Let him make his point.
Okay. My point was, independent software developer that goes ahead and says, like with Linux, all right, goes ahead and develops a version that he likes, he uses, and wants to distribute it, all right? The time that he puts into that product, it's a free product. Where does he get compensation?
They actually get compensation. They get.
Well, isn't the compensation that the product works better for him?
Well, let me explain. Let me answer your question.
I mean,
along with what JP just said.
Right.
The answer to the question is, some people have another job, okay? Mm-hmm. And they do this part-time. Now, some people, if they work for, like, a distribution, like Linux or like Red Hat or SUSE or any of the other ones, they actually get investment money. They sell their version in the stores for way cheaper than Windows. They sell for, like, $50 to begin with. They can go up to $180, depending on what's included. They give you tech support. So they're selling tech support, and they're selling you the book of how to install it. And they may offer other little services. They sell you that, and other companies that would like to see a competitor out there other than Microsoft, Intel's done a lot of investing into Linux. Hewlett-Packard has done a lot of investing into Linux. Maybe they're sick and tired of Microsoft's ways. So they know if they want to deal with somebody else other than Microsoft, these guys are going to need some backing, and they get money that way.
Right, and that was my overall point. That was my overall question, is you have – independents that are doing the work, how are they getting compensated? A corporation does what a major corporation like Microsoft does what it does because, one, like you said earlier, they can get away with it. All right, if they can get away with it, they'll do it. But they're doing it so they can maintain profit, be able to keep shareholders and stockholders happy.
But the amount of profit that they maintain is far great enough. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, in America, you're free to be as rich as you want to. I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, from a moral standpoint, I guess you get a little upset that, you know, you guys are making all this money, you're covering your R&D costs, but still, your operating system, and you got all these people, right? So, I mean, you've been successful, you made a successful product, people are buying it, but you still charge $300 for Windows. I mean, You know what I mean? It's like, I guess here's the battle. The people versus corporate.
Right.
And
whether
Microsoft is corporate of corporate.
Right. I mean,
I think they have a good product.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of things about it. I don't like some of the things we discussed that we don't like about it. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not one of those people to say, like, you know, just get rid of them. You know, if they tone some of the stuff down, and I mean, they don't have to do that. This is just moral. You know what I mean? But
right.
From an end user, that's like, if, you know, if they do a bad job for me, I'm going to turn to another product.
Right. And I can understand that. But when it comes to corporate America today, with the way things are going, the way things are set, and the way things are seen or to be seen in the near future, morals is not a question.
But, see, are you happy with that outlook? Because I'm not, and that's why I'm on the show.
Right. And that's why I'm here, too. I just want to know the whole story. See,
okay.
You guys have been here. You do the research. I'm Pestilence. I'm a pest, all right? I want to find out what's going on.
I got a big flash water for you.
Woohoo! So, that's what we're... That's, fine.
Okay.
That's my right. take, and I think some people over here agree.
Yeah.
Like,
so we'll vote on who's right.
Like I said before... I mean, we talk about other things, a lot of things, but I mean, this has been a big thing in the last couple of, like, 3 years about Linux and Arch. I don't care if it's named Punix. You know what I mean? It could be anything else.
Right.
But this type of model is pretty cool, and I like it. I mean, someone else may not like it, and that's fine. That's their choice. But,
yeah, I mean, I see your position, though, that it's a corporation. They're going to maximize profit. That's what a corporation is for.
Right.
Like, you hear on the debates on TV and everything.
Mm-hmm.
About the whole Letterman versus Dateline thing.
Yeah, right.
They all the newspaper get all the people on CNN are getting on their high horses, saying, "Well, now it's all about the bottom line." And I'm thinking, "Well, of course they're
where
a corporation.
The bottom line?
They're going to try and maintain the bottom line, which is profit. That's
right.
Why complain about it? It's just what it is."
If I was in Bill Gates' shoes right now, I'd be doing the same damn thing he is. All right.
Well, here's the thing though, is that he may learn that his business model won't work. In a society that's saying, I don't have to deal with your crap anymore.
Right.
But
yeah, well, especially with the state of globalization as copyright laws and those sorts of things are need the nation state to protect.
Right.
And once it starts crossing international lines, those kinds of things are not as protected. And so when it gets into a more global market, it's actually going to rely much more on the market share rather than... as being a better product or being more popular, so it actually beats out other products, as like Unix might actually have a better chance.
Well,
but anyway, so that's pretty much the point.
I mean, Bill Gates, Microsoft, they've been doing what they've been doing since late 60s, early 70s. All right. And, I mean, they do business that way, all right? It's made them... Mondo mega amounts of money, all right? And they'll keep doing it that way until, you know, either one, the system fails them, or two, they turn around and go to a new system. But the thing is in the end, they still come out ahead.
I'm not jealous that
yeah.
they may come out ahead.
Yeah.
I just don't want my DVDs and everything being sent back to Microsoft.
Right.
Well,
right.
And that's the advantage of our system is that you don't have to rely on Microsoft.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if you don't like it, there's always a product that doesn't do
it. And the thing
right.
was, is that there wasn't one before
right.
that gave you everything.
Right.
And that's why we talked about this, because it's interesting. And it is important, because it does affect everybody.
Yeah.
And it is cheaper. I mean, you're a small business, and do you want to pay $1,200 for a Windows 2000 server? And do you want to pay dollars on top of that per user that connects? And then do you want to pay for an Exchange server, another $1,200-some dollars? And then pay for how many users connect on top of that, and then $300 per workstation. I mean, you don't have to.
Right.
So that's why it's become a topic. I mean, I don't care if Microsoft's like the richest or non.
Mm-hmm.
They had a good idea, and, you know, they weren't doing these types of things until a certain period of time. You know what I mean? They weren't doing a lot of things that would make you upset.
Right.
You may have a problem with their product, but... Everyone's got a problem with the product. People got problems with Linux.
Yeah.
And, you know, but what I was saying is now we have an alternative, and it's just like, you know, if we had someone that was selling us water, okay, and there's one company that sold us water, and it was this crappy water, we're sick and tired of it, and somebody else came out with different water that was better for you and healthier, you'd be whining all the time why the guy that had the good water was the little guy, and you're sick and tired of the guy. You know, now you have an alternative. It's just, you know, every form of business has had these arguments.
Right.
And now there's someone that's becoming competitive. I mean, other than, you know, the whole Macintosh versus Apple versus Windows type thing. So
I guess kind of like when you really like a band and you're like, why aren't they on the radio? And they play this crap on the radio, sort of that sort of thing. Where you, it's kind of like just chaps your hide for some reason that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, I just, for me personally, I just like to see it from both sides. You know?
I think, I mean, I think I've tried doing that here.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Why don't we move on?
All right.
Just a skeptic, sorry.
That's okay. That's what the show's all about. If we were here and we all thought the same thing, it'd be pretty annoying because we'd sound like we all were just full of ourselves.
I agree with that.
See.
Crony.
VR's in the lotus position.
Actually, no, not quite.
The pseudo-lotus position.
Yeah, there you go.
Pseudo-quasi-semi-lotus position.
Because I'm a little too tense to actually even attempt even half-lotus right now.
Wow.
In this regard, Linux Prompt. Well, here, I was going to read. Let me finish reading this part right here. Hurdles to overcome. Yet while Linux is moving in the right direction, it's not there yet. Microsoft has certain advantages. One, hardware components. Most PC hardware comes with drivers from Microsoft operating systems due to the widespread belief that the PCs always run on Windows. Software, most third-party software, games, audiovisual media, applications, utilities for the desktop is compatible with one or more Microsoft operating systems. Microsoft Office is currently the de facto standard for Office programs because competitors have done more to imitate it than to develop an improved solution. Linux developers must realize certain features that should be omitted or turned off on Office network systems for reasons of security and system integration are essential for the gamer, home, and small office user. In a nutshell, the Linux community must develop both a quality GUI GUI system for configuring hardware and specialized system for installing and removing software. Developers must be persuaded to provide Linux drivers, especially for WIN modems, and to port their software products to Linux. WIN modem is a modem that actually is the sound from the modem is done on the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
What a WIN modem is, it works in Windows, and it's cheaper because you don't have to put this component in there. The software actually creates the sound.
But isn't that most of the stuff you just read already done? Like, I mean, there's already good graphic user interfaces. There's already, I mean, I guess the driver support would be the biggest thing.
All right, I'll go back over this. Hardware components, drivers. Most things ship with Linux drivers now. Printers ship with Linux drivers. If not, if it's not shipped with it, you can usually get off a website or you can find a hacked version out there somewhere that somebody pieced together. I mean,
But what if I'm using Linux and my modem doesn't come with Linux driver and then I'm kind of screwed.
You can usually install it.
That's like one of my cost internet services.
How could I download it from the internet?
You usually check the company's website.
He doesn't
have how could I get on the internet?
Well, for the most part, when you do have to get a driver, you have to have another machine. I mean, that's the facts for a Windows machine as well.
Okay.
That's like when I don't have internet access and I call Cox, and then the automated machine says, you may get faster service by sending us an email or checking our online support, and then I hunt them down and kill them.
Or I really enjoy it when you only have one phone line and you're trying to get tech support. And they're like, well, can you log on to the internet now? Well, if I do that, sir, I'm going to have to hang up with you, and then I don't know what to do. I'm back in where I started from.
So to get back to this, is that I got a Pentium 150 laptop that I built. I installed that, no problem detecting everything. I got a gigahertz machine installed with that, no problem detecting everything. Plays my DVDs and everything. I got a Pentium Celeron custom-built machine, everything.
And you're running Linux, to be explicit.
Yeah, I'm running Linux. Red Hat 7.2. There's other Linuxes I like as well, though. Some people bash you if you just like Red Hat. So it works fine. And actually, I didn't even have to do any special installs. It recognized it. So it was pretty good. Okay, so for software, this is definitely the truth. Most third-party games. Well, there's something called Lindos that just announced itself that Microsoft's really, really going after. You can install Microsoft Office. You can install anything that supports DirectX 7, I think, which is most video games. You can install, run all those programs if you please. As far as graphic goes, I know there's custom tools out there, and there's some graphic programs as far as for 3D modeling, not very many. supposedly they do lots of rendering on Linux machines because it's cheaper and they're pretty good. But I'm not quite sure. If there is, it's in the dark and I haven't read about it. But I know as far as like graphic manipulation, there's a program called the GIMP, which is just as good as Photoshop. And there is Office. You can use Star Office. Sometimes if you find it right, you can download it for free, which is, I mean, it's a pretty good Office suite. And sometimes you might have to pay for it, depending on where you find it on the net. So that works pretty well. Supports lots of file formats. There's also KOffice, which comes with KDE. Basic office functions. I mean, if you want to do presentations, if you want to do an Excel sheet and you want to calculate stuff in your Excel sheet, if you want to do Word and all that stuff, works fine. I mean, there's plenty of – the browsers are good. There's like there's about 7-8 popular browsers for Internet browsing on Linux. I mean, there's tons of mail clients if you want to get on IRC. And they all work with, I mean, Shock, Flash, everything runs. A lot of video games like Quake. Quake's got the Linux version. I think Wolfenstein 3D, the new came out. The new game, Return Back to Castle Wolfenstein. Awesome game. That's a Linux CD that you can buy. And I know I'm chatting a lot, but this is a lot of information.
Dude, just shut up.
But I'm basically saying, so anyone who would really like the nitty-gritty to know about that, it's out there. And as far as the GUI goes, I mean, they got a really quick install, and you can choose the components you want fairly easy. When I first learned Linux, it took me like a month to figure out how to install it. But now it's much easier than that. So.
Yeah.
You can use it.
Woo-hoo.
It works. And next story. Game makers tie up for a graphics board. It's kind of interesting. Sega Corp, Namco, and Nintendo announced Monday that they have teamed up to develop a computer graphics board for commercial use based on Nintendo's popular GameCube console.
Triforce.
The Triforce board. You'll be able to run three-dimensional graphics software and home entertainment video games and similar products based on the technology that powers Nintendo's console, they said in a joint statement. So that's going to be pretty cool. I like NVIDIA a lot. NVIDIA is pretty good. And then they have ATI, so...
Also, Square just announced that they're going to be, someone else announced that Square is going to be developing games for Nintendo again, which is the first time in for like 6 years. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that's going to give Nintendo a much greater market share just because it'll pull in other third-party developers, like Enix, for example.
JP?
Yeah.
Now, by looking at the Xbox games, is there any ingenuity in those games? Like, I played Halo. And it's no more different than Quake 2. It just has good graphics.
I don't know. I don't want to be accused of being a fanboy, but I haven't seen anything yet that amazed me.
Okay. I'll keep my eye open, and I'll definitely admit when I see something.
Sonic Advance is fun. Just want to throw that out there.
I saw that. I was looking at that today. I bought Strider. I got Streets of Rage 2. And I got Quackshot for Genesis today.
Quackshot. I remember that game.
That's awesome. I've been trying to go around, and every month I go around trying finding old games and collecting them. All right. Microsoft's lobbying efforts eclipse Enron. It's just an article talking about, well, how Enron is putting their cash in so many pockets, people's pockets, and everyone's, you know, worried about who's tainted and who isn't. And it's talking about actually how much money Microsoft puts into people's pockets, and it's quite a bit more than Enron. So it's just kind of another interesting article. The software giant's budget for its political action committee PAC increased from about $16,000 in 1995 to $1.6 million in 2000. So if VR, if you hang around Microsoft, you can get well paid.
Wow.
Brother.
That's where I need to be.
According to Edward Roeder, a self-styled expert in efforts to influence the U.S. government and founder of Sunshine Press Services, a news agency devoted to investigating money in politics, Reuters' report was submitted by Judge Caller Cotoli. At the end of January, Microsoft has been unable to comment. Judge Caller Cotoli heard that the total donations to political donations from Microsoft and its employees to political parties, candidates, and PACs in the 2000 election cycle amounted to more than $6.1 million.
Actually, that's not a whole lot if you count all those different PACs. Or political action committees. And
you money-grubbing pack bastard.
There are like 10,000 of them in this state alone.
But maybe they have nothing to do with the computer industry.
Right. And so if you're counting employees and not just Microsoft as well, oh, yeah, you know, how many thousands of employees does Microsoft have? And they all donate a dollar to a PAC. That's...
$1,000.
Well, that's because they don't donate any money, not the employees.
Well, didn't it... I thought it just said employees.
Well...
And so that
actually makes that statistic
virtually worthless.
Microsoft and its employees.
And its employees. So that $1.6 million figure actually includes donation from employees.
No, that was $6 million. I think the $6 million includes the employees and the $1.6 million doesn't.
I think $1.6 million represents 2000 and the 6.1 represents 2001 or 2002. Hold on. Let me read the article before we start tearing apart one sentence after another. I don't think we're all analyzing it.
Well, we're all critical thinkers here. That's why we're here.
Look, it's from Microsoft, and they're talking about their total contributions, and it's two PACs, and I'm sure it's only the PACs that have any influence, and there's many other things on the world to worry about than technology.
Which is probably only a part or a tenth of the tax cut that the Bush finance plan actually...
I never got my $300 check.
Put back into Microsoft. So they're like, well, hey, maybe we can actually do, get him reelected so he might do this again for us.
I'm sick and tired of grapefruit juice. Okay, so
I'm very proud
during
of
this period, Microsoft
doesn't keep you regular anymore?
Accounted for $2.3 million.
I know you were talking about that a while back.
What?
Grapefruit juice.
Oh, I just made it up because it was just some skewed thing to make it tie into this article that really has nothing to do with this article, which is kind of sounding like what you were talking about.
Ooh, a lot of hostility on the show.
It's fun. It's all good.
It's a lot better now that Dimitri's gone, I must say. No offense, Dimitri.
Microsoft and its executives accounted for $2.3 million in soft money contributions compared to $1.55 million by Enron and its executives for the same period. Soft money is a term generally given to unregulated corporate and individual contributions that cannot go directly to candidates, but which typically goes to political parties. The evidence came from a review of commission by the Computer and Communications Industry Association. Reuters said that although the research was based by the CCIA, a known critic of Microsoft, and evidence was based on the extraordinary public record of Microsoft's political activities during the time frame of this trial. And the article continues on into more details, but it's just saying that if you think Enron's putting dough in people's pockets, Microsoft's doing. I think a lot of other companies do as well. So
if I understood you right, he wasn't off the topic. He was saying that they might just be giving him money because they actually supported his policies, not because they had any bad intent in mind.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was saying. That they're like, hey, well, Bush gave us this great tax cut. Well, let's give some more soft, give the party some soft money to at least hedge, to make sure that somebody gets in office that will continue these great tax cuts for us. And if Enron did it...
I was just messing with you because I know you're part of the Democratic Party and I thought you were doing some Bush bashing. Even if you were.
He wants to fight you in the parking lot.
No, I
feel a little punchy tonight.
No, what I thought was that your main point was of the article, but it was just kind of like throw a Bush thing out there.
No, it's actually like illustrating how those nifty little cycles of money and politics can work.
Well, yeah. So it's all good. All right.
Yay.
And if you count employees, that just makes that whole figure just pointless.
Right. I think Pestilence is skeptical.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to test Pestilence out. Hey, Pestilence, what's going on, man?
Stuff.
All right, you didn't say you were gay. That was good.
Yeah, good job. You have joined the circle very well. All
right. Pestilence, do you have any thoughts on the show so far?
Thoughts on the show?
Yeah.
Interesting. The whole Enron thing, I've seen headlines.
I haven't bothered to read the article.
Nope.
Didn't think so.
Enron, what's that?
You know what?
You're a lot like Dimitri in that respect.
Yeah, well, the headlines are kind of interesting.
Hey, Dimitri is a great guy.
More like Bush signs.
May he rest in peace.
Bush, may he
rest in peace. No, that's bad. That'll get this show detected by the FBI.
Yeah, no.
What... The kind of headlines that I actually dig into is one that I saw today. Bush actually pushes forth for Pentagon to set up for targeting 7 different nations with nuclear weapons. Yes.
That's really freaky. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite scary.
Yes. I've been keeping more along my eyes on what's happening on the war front. Not necessarily just in the whole Al-Qaeda terrorist thing, but India, the Middle East.
Somalia. Philippines.
Yeah.
Very much more well-rounded view of what's going on in the state of the world.
It's bad stuff.
I can see that.
Yeah,
you know,
it is
you gotta
incredibly
pick and
frightening that any point in time...
Nuclear Armageddon will happen.
Yeah. Once again, we have a new Cold War, but it's not against one country. It's against everyone.
Right.
And including
except for our allies, which falling one by one by the wayside.
Yeah, because we're going way over aggressive and trying to impose our empirical, you know, egocentric viewpoint upon the world. And then pissing off everybody else because we're not completely right in every context.
I think it's completely stupid that they would even release that kind of information.
I think it's a scare tactic overall. I meant the Pentagon.
It scares me.
It's meant to.
But see, one of the greatest ways.
Let's scare our citizens.
You know, as I keep saying over and over again in these kinds of situations, the easiest way for people to get cohesion of a group that they're trying to lead is give them somebody to hate.
Right.
So we are.
Nazi Germany.
What if I was like, please, Mr. America, don't threaten these people with nukes?
So we build this cohesion because we hate the rest of the world because they're scary. They have nuclear weapons, and they really don't like our overbearing nature. Well, great. We really love us, and so we build even empower ourselves even further into this egocentric viewpoint that's great and wonderful. And so we justify ourselves even more in being overbearing, which then pisses off people even more.
Well,
and
I think
then we add nuclear weapons into that, and it gets messy really quick.
I think I'm going to say a real quick sense. If this happens, I'm going to Canada. Nobody wants to bomb them.
Oh, yeah. You'll have 1.3. Actually, you'll have a minute and a half to react.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Well, no.
And then you'll have to drink milk in a bag. And all that.
Most major metropolitan cities. All right.
We like Canadians here, guys.
Russian nukes. Some of the third world nations that now have nuclear capability. Hell, even India has parts of our country targeted at this point since they developed nukes. I mean, right now, every major metropolitan city lies within at least 50 miles of a military base of some sort. Each one of those is a probable area of attack. There's no way that an average citizen is going to be able to get into a vehicle and get out of a city in time to be able to avoid that kind of destruction. On top of it, I mean, where VR talks about our overbearing nature, all right, you got to remember, it wasn't but 5-6 years ago that China, when we were defending Taiwan's coastal waters, threatened the West Coast with a nuclear attack. This came straight from China. I mean,
well, how would we feel if, from their point of view, that'd be like, you know, them defending Hawaii against us from their point of view. I don't agree with it. But
no, we would be trying to defend Hawaii against them.
Well, from their perspective, we're defending.
They want Taiwan. They pretty much claim.
Yeah, Hawaii was trying to succeed from America, and when we were trying to do something about it, and then all of a sudden China was in the middle of it. From their point of view, that's the same as our interaction with Taiwan.
But in the Taiwanese situation, Taiwan is recognized by the UN as independent of China. It's not like Hong Kong. It's not like Hawaii. They do have independence. China doesn't like it, you know, but we got to help our allies.
I'm going to let you guys know.
In that sense.
Pestilence may be a Circle K clerk, but he's damn smart.
This guy he's sitting in front of how many newspaper racks a day?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so. Can't but help it at least get some from osmosis.
I don't know, man. I don't think Truman made a mistake, you know, dropping the bomb, but I would sleep a lot better at night if it were never around. I don't know about you guys, but...
I think back then it was more... We had more of the edge, you know what I mean? But nowadays, I mean, if we say, like, all right, punk, you know what I mean?
Yeah, once it was out there, it was out there. I don't know, sometimes I wonder if the Germans ever would have actually created it. A lot of people think they would have, but if they were actually succeeded in finding it... If we never got involved,
actually the Germans were only two and a half years behind.
Yeah,
and
but
they already had plans for their war machine to actually start using it against London, New York. They already had several targets for that kind of weapon picked out: Moscow, Stalingrad.
Well, they had the targets picked, but they were actually
strange weapons as well. They were trying to make a gun which could actually shoot, you know, like a bullet to London.
Right. One of the super guns.
Yeah, they actually were, you know, had hollowed out or made a big old hole in a mountain and were trying to get this, you know, to actually...
Well, the concept was feasible. And
except
fact,
for the harmonics of the...
The weapon itself. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, even, 15, 20 years ago, Iraq was actually in the process of purchasing such a weapon.
The super gun?
I thought we developed the super guns
and
here first.
No. Germany...
I saw a show on this on HBO. I think I was developing a super gun.
Man, you're way better than Dimitri.
Okay, Germany actually developed the super gun. In fact, the Paris gun developed by the Germans was used in Paris. Well, actually, against Paris. But the gun was able to lob shells 50 to 70 miles in some cases, depending on winds.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware. I thought they were all, like, completely infunctional.
Oh, no. In fact...
Because I know about the buzz bombs, which were really a nifty thing.
Yeah. The really bad thing with the super guns is a company here in the U.S. was actually building the components that were going to be shipped overseas to Iraq. And this was about 15, 20 years ago, and it was actually confiscated by the CIA. The gun's never been assembled, but according to all the static tests, the gun would be feasible and capable of launching projectile into low Earth orbit and being able to cross the northern Atlantic.
So what's the distinction between a gun and, like, an intercontinental ballistic missile?
Well, actually, one would be self-propelled and the other would be...
Exactly.
I did. Actually, I saw the show. They had a show about that. That's
pretty neat. Got to have the History Channel. Can't live without it.
Love it.
That, the Learning Channel. You know,
got it. Good.
It occupies what little time I have.
Mm-hmm.
The Discovery Channel.
Yeah, the Learning Channel, the Health Channel.
Discovery Channel is actually biased. I won't watch them anymore.
Yeah. They're a little biased.
And the Cooking Channel when I'm really hungry.
Yeah, but unfortunately,
got
ramen on this show. Watching the Cooking Channel. Oh, that steak looks good.
Yeah, I just watch the TV and shovel in the ramen, and I don't know the difference.
So what's your problem with Discovery Channel?
Oh, Discovery Channel is...
They're corporate,
they're too soft, and they like to candy coat history. History Channel pulls no punches when it comes to what they show.
Except when they show the Black Sheep Squadron.
Right.
Yeah, that...
I noticed that, but I mean, it's still general good information.
Yeah, it's...
Or Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah. But the thing with Black...
There was a porn star that got killed in Scottsdale.
It was a porn star. He was the star of...
Hogan's
Heroes.
I know, but then he made his own porn movies after that.
He was
how could he when he was dead?
No. After he got out of Hogan's Heroes, this was mid-late 70s. Living here in Phoenix, he was doing amateur porn, and he actually got...
He was messing with my English.
He was killed. Yes. Some say he was shot. Others say he was stuck with a stiletto heel off of a shoe.
Woo!
Right in the temple.
Damn, what a life.
Yeah.
Now we're talking Biography Channel.
Woohoo! Yeah. But no, at least with Black Sheep Squadron on the History Channel, they actually give commentary from actual pilots.
Well, no, the actual pilots that were of the Black Sheep Squadron that are still alive.
This is the first
which
show.
Which is really great because
spoken the whole time.
Because in a couple of years, all of World War One vets are going to be gone.
World War Two vets.
Oh yeah, the World War One vets
are
already
pretty
back.
Much already gone.
Yeah,
yes.
there's probably
no there. Around. It's World War One vets are going to go.
Yeah, he's right.
World War Two are going to go pretty soon.
Yeah, because the World War Two vets are only like 57.
Try 80. 80?
80.
No,
oh wow.
You're thinking of World War One.
Yeah. World War Two vets. My grandfather was a vet.
Oh, okay.
That was in 47.
Yeah, but we're idiots. They were like
1841.
What? 1841?
1941.
Yeah, but you could
bomb Pearl Harbor.
You could fight, through 1944, right?
All right.
Oh wait, if their age was 20 or 19 when they joined up,
or 14. Right.
Yeah, they're about 82, 83.
Right. Most vets from World War II are passing by. Now, you're talking 1916 to 1918 for World War One. Those guys are mostly dead.
Mostly dead. Yeah, there might be a few
isolated individuals.
There's one left.
There's like one left. He's like 100-something
now.
Yeah.
I actually saw, they had a birthday for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess the general point going back to our previous conversation, is that we now know that people are ready to do any dirty tactic to get into anyone's country.
Right.
So now that the stakes are higher, it's much more.
Stakes are a lot higher.
Much more thing to worry about.
And much more difference of surplus value.
And once the stakes are that high, I mean, is our eventual destruction inevitable? To me, it almost
seems
like
it is. But can we ever reach up to grab the meat?
I could see how, since we've had the first strike, major strike, I could see that nobody has any bars now to do anymore. You know what I mean? It's just...
It's going to happen again.
Yeah.
It's just a question of when, where, and how.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so sure, because even the, Ireland Republican Army...
Irish Republic, IRA?
IRA, okay. Thank you. actually started disarmed and started talks.
But you're also talking about...
one out of 20 bad countries right now?
Right. I mean... The Irish, they've always had problems with the Protestants, the Catholics versus the Protestants, the Irish versus the English. There's always been conflict and hatred there. But it's small, it's localized, it will and can be diffused with proper talks. You're talking very separatist, very ideologically different kind of individuals when you're talking about the kinds of people that make up Al-Qaeda. These are the kind of people that an IRA soldier won't sacrifice himself the same way a terrorist will.
Yeah, I agree. There's a fundamental difference. It's sort of on a separate playing field.
Right. I mean, these guys are willing to blow themselves to smithereens to take out as many innocent or non-innocent people as possible from their viewpoint. Whereas an IRA soldier will plant a bomb, but he's not going to be staying around for it.
Well, and by that standard, would the Israel-Palestinian conflict be on the same playing field?
Yeah. Same thing's happening in India right now between the Hindus and the Muslims. Right now, it's getting to the point where it's world versus Muslims. And it's a bad thing. I mean, you're talking...
The Old Testament versus the New Testament?
Exactly. And that's exactly where it's going. And, I mean... The only time that that actually happens is you start looking at Revelations. It's Armageddon. It's common.
And now we need Dimitri.
What?
He's obsessed.
Yeah, he did have some stuff to say about this.
He's well versed in apocalyptical matters.
But,
can we like pull a seance and possibly have him come back from the dead and actually speak his message? Is there a possibility of that?
I don't know. What do you think?
Should I pull out the Ouija board?
Okay, Pestilence, with the supernatural powers that I do possess, seeing into the nether realm.
Pestilence plays D&D.
He seems to be reluctant.
Well,
he
mad because
like
I made
flop
him upside the head.
Oh, okay, all right. Spiritual flop.
Can we get some?
No, I think I just killed him on that.
Oh,
one.
Darn! Again?
Yeah, again. Yeah, well, he's spiritually dead now.
Okay.
Can we get some Dimitri call back from the dead? Can we get him just to can he rise his spirit just enough to talk about what he has learned from going to death?
Ooh,
it's a start.
And he's mighty peeved.
He's peeved because
wise from your grave.
Wise from your grave. If anyone knows what wise from your grave means,
email us.
The guy
and get
from
a lot
the
of free stuff.
Bride, the
email
guy
us
that tried to marry everyone.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah,
at quest.net. Please email us at in and out at quest.net if you know what
wise from your grave
means.
You'll get free stuff.
I will hook you up with anything
air.
I can possibly.
Anyway, I definitely support that thesis. Things seem to indicate, a revelations scenario, even though, of course, people have always thought that for... the last 2,000 years that they were living in the Temple of Revelation, but there's so many things converging in the whole Jerusalem conflict. It's just, I don't know. It seems really a very strong possibility.
We can move to Canada now. You guys want to go?
Canada's not invincible.
Hey, Minnesota.
I'm just joking.
Bloody
and actually,
cold.
They are part of a target because we do host nuclear missiles there as well.
Right. You could always go to Minnesota. That's a nice place this time of year.
Yeah. It's where those kids from Beverly Hills... 90210 were from
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because look what kind
California,
of people come from.
But I'm feeling Minnesota.
Yeah.
So saith the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I saw Artificial Intelligence. That was a neat movie.
Thank you. Oh. I was waiting for somebody to correct me on that.
Right. Have you guys seen Artificial Intelligence?
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Okay.
I hate Kubrick.
Hold on. It's not factual, but it is interesting.
What are you talking about?
It was directed by Spielberg, and the screenplay was by Spielberg.
Yeah, based on a story by Kubrick.
Oh,
what else explains why it was so disjointed and illogical?
Yeah, I didn't like it. It was
there was no narrative structure.
It would kind of get to a great like insight into the human existent, and then go. I'm going off somewhere else.
Yeah,
I agree
with VR.
I think K-Pax is better.
That was much better.
Very
that
good.
That brought a smile to my face.
But if I could, I see what they're trying to do with artificial intelligence, and I'm not basing it off factualness. It does make it think a little different.
Okay. All right. Here's my question.
Of how sick and twisted that we all want to be loved, that we would make a robot.
Yeah, okay. Maybe it wasn't totally worthless.
Forever.
But just
that's
like...
sick and wrong.
Just I'm like, not going
to
buy
from
it.
The point of view that...
it is better to love and loss.
Like the kid was made... Shut the heck up!
I take it to be a believer in God.
Wait. Hold on. There's a lot of believers in God in this room.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me say this.
Why did God create Adam?
Because, all right, that robot in AI, why was he made so that he could safely fall in the pool, and that didn't hurt him all? But if he ate some food, like, that went directly to his computer chips and destroyed him, like, what kind of design was that?
That didn't make sense at all. It was all the way down there in a piece of chip that was pushed into something.
That was very stupid.
That didn't have, like, a tube going from the throat all the way down.
Okay, now, what were you saying?
Well, okay, all right. God made Adam. God made Adam so
he could be loved.
God could be loved. He wanted something to love him. Why would a man do the same thing?
Imperfection, ego, and
a little bit of rock and roll.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm hearing more of his ghost.
Yeah, what was the ghost noise there?
I'm not exactly sure. I was drowned out by your babbling.
This is the way a radio show should be. You know what I mean? Because you suck, Pestilence. I'm sick and tired of you. And you, JP, your ideas are so out of whack. I don't even know why you exist on this planet.
Okay, Pestilence sucks.
Are you making a point there?
No, I was talking about that's what they usually do on talk shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
That's what they do with
Pestilence. What was the so he could be loved and
the point is that was the only reason. All right. Everybody wants love in one form or another. That's why a 16-year-old girl that shouldn't have a child decides to keep it instead of doing what's right for the child and giving it up for abortion.
You can't make a general statement like that.
I've seen enough instances in my own life where that would hold true. It's not always.
Okay.
And that is too generalized. But it's that kind of thing. All right? A person goes out and buys a dog. Well, because they like dogs, but a dog gives unconditional love back to the owner. There are reasons for it. The human condition is that which a person needs to feel important, to feel loved, to feel like there's a purpose to do more for something else and be able to take care of something else and have that return with an emotion.
Yeah, well, that's if that's what you base your ultimate existence or your meaning for your life on. There are many other things that you can do that with. Now, to go back to the God thing, does that really make him perfect if he needs to be loved? If he needs something outside that he had to create so he could, you know, essentially have this input loop.
Because he was able to fulfill that need for himself by creating someone else, but still he fulfilled it for himself.
He had the power to fulfill his own need. Having a need.
Because he could fulfill it.
Now that is an interesting topic, though.
It is, but I see what JP's saying.
Yeah, see, I can see that as well, but
the
need to be exalted,
the need
to be loved.
Existed prior.
We're going to go into, so you guys can keep talking about this, but I want you to bring up later what we're talking about, the 12th planet.
The 12th planet, Nibiru.
Let's see
we will talk about the Anunnaki.
Okay, why don't you just bring it up
There's something else going back into that. You know, there's other things that you can base your own self-worth on other than being loved.
Like what?
I don't know, production. but that's expression self-love. Of yourself.
See, I don't know.
Art.
I don't. But I think it all. It, you might not call it love, but it has to boil down to some interaction with another human being.
Well, see, then that's something different because yes, we can go without food longer than we can go without other interaction. But that's an intrinsic property of our, our organism. But there are other things that we can do that fulfill us in other ways.
Yeah. I just think, overall, I mean, the human condition is one that we need a lot of different things to exist. Love being one of them, food being another, sleep, sense of self-worth. But, I mean, try to put yourself in God's shoes. You're the only one there. Yes, you may be perfect in what can be considered a vacuum, but even a madman in a prison who's perfectly at ease with his own insanities and doesn't care anything about the outside world will develop his own personalities just to keep himself company.
Well, like, weird. Actually, the best story of Brahman I've ever heard was that Brahman is essentially the pregnant void, and he became aware of himself, and then he became bored because he was the only thing out there. So he decided to play a game. And of course, Brahman is perfect. That he played the game that he chose, which was hide and go seek, so well that he forgot where he hid. And he hid himself in trees and rocks and people.
Well, then he was really good at hiding, not necessarily seeking.
Well, and every once in a while, something of Brahman realizes, oh, yeah, I'm Brahman, and returns to the pregnant void.
So,
and then once probably that all goes back, that Brahman returns to himself completely and plays the game all over.
And reality as we know it is ultimately destroyed.
Right. Well, until then the next game will probably be Ring Around the Rosie.
Right.
And then we'll all be really dizzy.
Yeah. I hope they don't play Red Rover, though. I don't like Planetary Impact.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in Nibiru and the 12th Planet a little later.
Also, male sex species animals, some of them out there, change to where they're able to have children.
Wow.
And make a baby themselves.
Transsexual bestiality.
Well, yeah, I just
thank
like
thank goodness Dimitri's not here for that.
Yeah, because we couldn't get him away from the knot hole.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do this story before we move on to the other talking. States want Windows source code. Big. Actually, you know, there were so many stories this month, it was hard to pick and choose. And there's actually a lot of stories about the states versus Windows in their suit. Update, Washington, the state attorneys generally still pursuing the antitrust case against Microsoft have asked a federal judge to force the company to show them the inner workings of their Windows operating system. In a bid to pry open the world's most valuable pieces of intellectual property, the states argued that they need to see the Windows source code in order to verify Microsoft's claims that it is not technically feasible for the company to offer a stripped-down version of Microsoft's system. That's a good hit. Microsoft cannot base its defense on a design of its source code, simultaneously deny the legitimating states.
Litigating.
My bad.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I don't say that word too often. States the opportunity to test those arguments by interrogating the code, the state said in their filing. The motion was filed by U.S. District Judge Colleen Kohler-Catelli on Tuesday and made available Wednesday. As part of their proposed sanctions against Microsoft, the states have told Kohler-Catelli that she should order the company to offer a stripped-down version of Windows without any additional features, such as Internet Explorer browser. In demand to see the Windows source code, the state said the legal question is the case cannot be fairly resolved when the very subject matter is in dispute is hidden from all but Microsoft's own employees. Andrew Gavel, a professor in antitrust law at Howard University, said Microsoft could have a hard time refuting the argument. This is the equivalent of demanding of Coke that would turn over the formula. Gavel said that is exactly what Microsoft wanted to avoid. In Tuesday's motion, the states also asked the judge to appoint a technical expert to help provide impartial opinions on the complex subject, highly technical issues raised by the parties. Microsoft has rejected both requests when approached directly by the states. Microsoft spokesman Jim Delsler said the company had proved during the trial that it was impossible to remove Windows software features from Windows without damaging the operating system. Well, that they would still want to sell.
for the record, they recently admitted that that was false.
Yeah. I mean, you could make it whatever you want.
Yeah, but...
Right. Well, also, they've made tobacco companies give up what they add into tobacco.
Yeah.
So
this is a beautiful thing that they gave to Microsoft. It was awesome. Destler said state attorneys generally are working hand-in-hand with Microsoft competitors who will stop at nothing to get access to our intellectual property.
They're pissed.
Yes. Microsoft reached a deal with Justice in November to settle a long-running case. 9 of the 18 states in the lawsuit agreed to sign onto the deal, but 9 others are pressed ahead and asking a judge to impose stricter sanctions. During the trial, the government accused Microsoft of its using its Windows monopoly to snuff out competitors who make add-on middleware products such as AOL, Time Warner's Netscape Navigator browser. In the landmark ruling of this case in June, federal appeals court dismissed parts of the government's case, but upheld a lower court's conclusion that Microsoft had used illegal tactics to maintain the Windows monopoly. Among the illegal tactics cited by the court was the commingling of Windows source code with add-on middleware. The dissenting states, including California, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, say the availability of the stripped-down browser without all the extras would help restore the competition to the software business. Let me tell you this. You install Windows XP, you get a burning software, you get a media software, as far as like CDs, MP3s, whatnot. You get an Internet Explorer browser. All the basic tools and utilities, I think maybe there's, they don't have unzipping. Maybe they do. I don't know. But all the basic utilities that somebody else could sell, they've covered. Which is, you know what I mean, if I made a CD burning software and I sold it for $20 and it went on 2 million machines, and with the development costs, I'd still at least make $1 million. You know what I mean? So that's...
It's kind of like when you're buying a house, you know, the builder puts in all the furniture for you, and so you don't even get a choice of what kind of furniture, colors, those kinds of schemes, to personalize it, to utilize it in the most effective manner it is for you.
One question, and this is kind of with the subject, kind of not. Now, when it comes to parts of Windows operating system, I'm a little fuzzy. Because right now I'm running Windows 98 upgrade. That's it. Upgraded from 95. And I've noticed that, yes, I do have Internet, you know, Explorer. But I also just have my standard Windows browser, you know, to be able to browse through all of my Windows. All right? And I noticed that they function one and the same at the same time. So
here's the difference.
Yeah, this is what I want to know.
Here's the difference. Is that they look the same? They did that just because of ease of use for
well,
you?
No, actually, I can be sitting there. I have my hard drives listed out. You know, I can have my file folders.
And you type a web page in.
And I can type a web page in, and bam, it pops up. I have a web page over here, and I still got my file folders over here.
Here's the difference. They added in the code to read the HTTP protocol, read the file types, read Flash, read Shockwave, all the add-ons, Java.
Yeah, because you do have the option of being able to make all your folders HTML look and feel.
Well, that's what they did for
for
files. I mean, we could separate that issue, leaving that for the file manager.
But, I mean, you can still...
But they didn't have to add that in. They could have made it a separate product.
Right.
Right.
Now,
well, the Windows operating system...
a free product, but... They chose to integrate it, and there was tactics used to make it hard for Netscape Navigator to be installed and work properly.
Right.
They even made the site crash intentionally when you try to browse to it from IE Explorer, which they admitted to.
Well, logically, it's really evident that Internet Explorer is not intrinsic to, or is not necessary for Windows.
No.
So how can the removal of Internet Explorer
screw
up, Windows?
It's the argument isn't that they could not construct operating system independent of a web browser. The argument is that the web browser is currently so built into it, it's so integrated that everything's I don't know how exactly to say it, but everything's referencing HTML, everything's scripted in such a way that. There's so many lines of code that they're saying they couldn't take it out without crippling it.
Here's a way to explain it, like another thing. Also, with XP, it comes with MSN Explorer, which is their online service. It doesn't come stock with AOL. There's another thing. Okay, so with what JP was saying is that also, like, if you buy Office 2000 or Office XP or whatever, so many things like tie into Internet Explorer or, like, features that are included. Like, you can run a PowerPoint presentation through Internet Explorer. You can view Word and Excel documents through Internet Explorer. People like those functions, and they may think that, okay, well, we may bundle Office with Internet Explorer because we need that. And then people will say, well, shoot, now you're bundling Office with Internet Explorer, and you're not allowing it, and it's just as bad as you bundling with your operating system. So I guess there is an argument there, but they can make it componential. And it may make it harder for them, but it does make it better for competitors, which is what it's all about. Does anyone tell me what's going on with the...
He's going to go and be the man on the mountain.
10-4.
Damn, he's addicted.
We're all addicted to something.
I've been addicted lately in my spare time to True Combat. Awesome.
Dude, hey, we want to try and hook up Half-Life Counter-Strike on our network, and we should all.
I have Half-Life, but I don't have Half-Life Counter-Strike.
I think it's a free patch.
For Half-Life? I do own Half-Life, and I do own Quake 3. So, we'll make it work, dude.
All right.
I don't know how well your Cox is going to help it make it.
Cox sucks.
Cox sucks bad. Cox is faster than TSO. And Quest pisses me off, too. But their service is pretty good for me at DSO.
It's time to bash the public utilities.
Well, you know about Quest's new thing about selling your information, and you have to call them and tell them you don't want your information.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah. Well, they do that with pretty much whatever you do. You sign up for a credit card, they sell you to 5 others. Then... if you don't get back to those 5 others, then they sell you, each one of those sell you to 5 others.
Sometimes it's fun to create something with, like, a weird name and then see, like, just do it for one thing and then see what it comes up. Kind of like when people create an email account and they just give their email address away to, like, one thing, and then all of a sudden they get tons of spam. Like,
I've always wanted to get a big rubber red stamp with red ink and stamp on them deceased and send them back and see what happened.
I've gotten, like... people write back to, for the website I work for, people write back that want to get off the emailing list. And, like, some people say, the person who you're emailing is dead. It really hurts when I read these messages. It hurts my feelings. And I'm always thinking, you can get an email address for free. Why are all these people sharing email addresses with each other?
That's what Hotmail's for. That's the spam director. You just direct your spam towards your Hotmail account that you never use. There's this one, one sec. There was this person at school, there's these two kids, and they had a roommate, and they read at lunch, they would purposely try to find things to sign his email address up at lunch all day long. They
funny.
Like Hair Club for Men or like gay websites or whatnot. They just try to find the worst stuff and sign him up for an email list.
That's pretty funny.
Well, that's with credit card slips, when they send those to you. You know those business return envelopes? You really want to have some fun and give the post office some money, get a box, fill it with rocks, and tape that envelope onto the box and send it back to them. The company must pay that.
Oh, that's messed up.
And you can put a note on it saying, please take me off your mailing list.
That's pretty funny. You know what else is that?
And they still will not take you off. They will send you another one so you can do the same thing once again. Over and over and over.
That's when you file your taxes, the same thing if you attach something to it, they legally can't. Not only do they have to, like, accept it, they don't pay the mailing, obviously, but they have to file it, and they have to keep track of it. So if you could attach some huge, gargantuan thing, and they have to file that with your thing, they have to, like, it's really inconvenient for them.
How about the
phone book?
You guys have your old junker car. So actually,
drive
this,
it down there.
Yeah, I got this as a tax write-off. I went ahead, crated it up. Stuck my W-2s to my tax forms. Go in.
Here's something interesting for eBay.
Are you speaking theoretically, or you actually did that?
No, I'd actually like to do that.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Could you imagine the shipping and freight? And, I mean, exactly how would the IRS file, like, a big old Cadillac?
Yeah. Or even, like, a Pinto. Small, but yet...
A Pinto, yeah.
It's still got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, we could actually, like, organize a whole, like... anti-IRS campaign for people to send them their junk cars.
Yeah, I think
they'll just
give
that off to those junkyard places and maybe some
money.
Yeah,
but I mean,
they have to keep it legally. That's the point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the thing is file space. Where would they put it? I mean, God.
I bet you somebody's done that already. Here's something.
Can you get it back whenever you want?
That's interesting.
See that?
I have a copy of it.
I need a copy of the card that I sent you.
Probably a newer version.
You know what, how much money I would save on storage space? You could just like send them stuff and go, here you go, keep that for me for a while.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't need that blue storage shield kind of little,
yeah, the little
hole in the wall storage places. Yeah, just send them all your stuff that you don't want to.
Yeah,
because
you know I got
going to need that back thing.
I've got an old engine that's sitting in the garage. You know, it's taking up some space. So I'm going to get to it eventually. Just send it off to the IRS. Have them send it back to me when I'm
You know what's going to happen, though, with all the stuff that you send in? It's going to end up in one of those big Indiana Jones warehouses. You know, it's going to be like just filed away, forgotten kind of thing, red tape and all that. And you'll never get it back.
No.
I think if there's a nuclear bomb, I maybe want to try to find one of those places.
And you know what? That is not an idea for any axe murderers out there trying to get rid of bodies.
Wow.
Although it would be interesting.
Okay. Here's something you can do for eBay that's interesting. Here's something you can do.
They're not going to stop laughing, so just start talking.
Okay. So here's what you can do for eBay. A lot of people, you know, if they rip you off on eBay or whatever, most of the time, I mean, sometimes you can get some of your money back, if not. None of it. Well, sometimes, okay. Anyways, what you can do is that when you mail the money to that person, go to the post office.
Oh, yeah, this is cool.
And get a money order from the post office. Now, if they commit a crime with that money that you had given to them, like not give you the item in return, that is a federal crime. They have now committed a federal crime.
Because it's mail fraud.
It's mail fraud. And they can be prosecuted much worse than if you send them a normal money order or anything else. So basically, it's another way of screwing them, you know, and protecting yourself.
Same way if you just get them to, like, mail you some information about it, and then if anything's wrong, then that's mail fraud, which is really cool.
So
Postmaster General is our friend.
Actually, I read a story just came into mind. I don't have it in front of me, but I know what it is. The story was there's this guy, there's somebody at eBay that had, like, 400 good sales. Except he sold something of, like, huge value. I think it was, like, a car or something where it was tens of thousands of dollars. Once he received that, because the guy trusted him enough to do business with him, once he received that money, he just bounced. So that's a new form of fraud, is that they build up their trust. Maybe they'll sell tons of items, you know what I mean? Like, okay.
Cheap stuff, yeah.
Yeah, or anything.
Or just
like,
post fake items and bid on their own thing, and then they only have to pay the eBay charge of, like, 3% or whatever it is.
Yeah. So by doing that, you know, it's more tactical way of getting your money. So it's something to watch out for. So, I don't know. eBay is still a good service. That's something to look out for.
Yeah, just use an escrow service if you want to be, you know, secure at night.
All right, well, I would like to end the show on something interesting.
12th Planet.
12th and planet. I would like...
12th Planet.
Cheeseburgers? Okay, fine, 12th Planet.
And fries.
I would like Pestilence to hit us off. This is something actually Pestilence had told me about, and I'd heard a little bit about it myself and something I had read, and I even told another friend of mine who's really into this kind of stuff, and he explained some more detail, and I think it's a good conversation. So.
All right, basically, we start off with a guy by the name of Zachariah Sitchin. If any of our listeners out there ever listen to the Art Bell Show, you know exactly who I'm talking about. All right. Zachariah Sitchin, basically, I think it's Polish? I'm not sure. But Middle Eastern. Middle Eastern Europe. Oh, okay. Yeah, Middle Eastern Europe. All right. Way off over there somewhere by Russia.
From the Middle East of Europe.
Middle East of Europe, yes. There actually is one. All right. Basically, his overall specialty is the ancient Middle East, Sumeria, and the basically Euphrates Valley, all that kind of ancient civilization, stuff that dates back at least 8,000 to 10,000 years. And in the early 70s, he had come across several different Sumerian tablets that actually described our solar system down to not only the nine planets that we know of, but Earth's moon and several of the more visible, or what you could consider more visible, moons of Jupiter. But there was also several other planetoid bodies that are not described by modern science. One of them being, in the Sumerian text, the 12th planet known as Nibiru. Now, according to the translations that he's been able to come up, get out of the texts, out of these tablets, Nibiru is a 12th planet, belongs to the solar system, that has a 3,300-year orbit, greatly elliptical. All right, it basically follows the trajectory of a comet. Every 3,300 years, it comes in from deep space, passes through our inner solar system, coming in as close as, I believe, Venus, and then passing back out. Now, also, according to the tablets, during this period of time in early solar evolution, before our planet even held life, Nibiru, the 12th planet, actually came into extremely close proximity with our Earth, then known to the Sumerians as the planet Tiamat. During this close encounter, two of Nibiru's moons actually left it, one slamming headlong into our planet and creating what we now can consider the supercontinent of Pangaea, which is actually proven scientific theory, not quite fact, but as far as we understand, Pangaea did exist, all right, at one time in Earth's evolution.
Scientifically.
Well, also, if you cut apart a, you know, a map of the Earth, they all fit together rather well.
I don't buy that.
Well, I'm not selling it.
Well, let's finish the rest of the story.
One, not only do they fit together rather well, but two, fossil records indicate that species of similar origin and descent have existed on these shorelines.
We'll debate it all in the end.
All right. Well, I've always believed somewhat in the idea of dinosaurs, Precambrian life, all this kind of stuff.
Precambrian. No, Cambrian, the layer. Cambrian is where life started.
Yeah. And then
Precambrian is before that, life.
Yeah. But don't forget, Pangaea and the supercontinent actually date from Precambrian times.
Now, I would have to look that back up. To debate you, actually, really informative, because it's been...
You
really
know rough. Nothing. I know nothing.
Okay.
But as far as that, the only way a supercontinent like that could exist in any physical sciences classroom is to have a major impact. You take a balloon, fill it with mud, all right? Slosh all the mud to one side of the balloon, try to spin it. What happens when you spin the balloon? It's off balance. It will wobble, all right? And what happens with the mud eventually inside the balloon? It will eventually come to a point where it spreads itself evenly over the inner surface of the balloon. Well, same kind of concept works with the planet. All right. If you have a large mass on one side of a planet, gravity holds it in and in place, but as the planet spins, you will have tectonic shifting, and eventually that mass will spread out evenly over the planet. Now, taking tectonic theory into consideration here, we do know that the continents, as we know them now, are moving in directions that would point to them originally being together as a supercontinent. Two, the only way that would have happened is having a supercontinent is from a major impact. The major impact being supported by ancient Sumerian texts saying that ancient Earth, known as Tiamat, was impacted by a moon of Nibiru. Our moon, already proven by scientific fact, is not native to the Earth-Moon system. It is from outside our part of the solar system, not outside the solar system itself. But it wouldn't have the materials that our moon is made out of are not overall the same kind of materials that our planet itself is made out of. The two could not evolve side by side. Whereas you look at the moons of Jupiter. The moons of Jupiter are rocky moons in some regards, but a lot of the materials that they are made out of can be found more readily in the atmosphere of Jupiter. Io, for example. Methane volcanoes. Really nifty stuff like that.
If the atmosphere or the planet was mainly made out of methane and it had volcanoes, it would be a big fireball.
Io is a fireball. It has a solid crust with a fiery interior, and it's volcanoes.
Isn't that kind of like Earth?
Yeah, but you got to remember, it's made out of the native elements that exist in the Jupiter area.
Actually, we haven't had a satellite actually land on that yet. So
yes, but we have had ones go close enough by to take spectral analysis to be able to determine the kinds of elements that the planetoid is made out of.
Yeah. So is this 12th planet supposed to still be around?
The 12th planet actually is still supposed to be around.
But it's outside of...
It's outside of our solar system as it is.
Well, sorry, but it's outside of our...
Actually, I'll start building on this. All right. That's just some of what I've read, I've seen, I've been able to actually deduce, all right? Zachariah Sitchin, in his books and in his writings, goes into a lot more detail on a lot of these concepts. But after that overall collision, the two planets hadn't come that close again, you know, collision close. But independently, over the next 4.5 billion years, life did develop on both planets. Earth, we know what life is like. Nibiru, different kind of life, but still sentient, still humanoid to a point. All right. Now, according to Sitchin's translations of the Sumerian tablets, these individuals had developed heightened technology much quicker than we had on our planet. And as far back as 40,000 years ago, had actually made several trips to this planet because of the depletion of their own resources, actually being stated in the Sumerian tablets. At that time, what we had was, basically primordial man getting ready to rise in evolution, if you believe in the theory of evolution. Well, according to Zachariah Sitchin's theories and what he's found on the tablets, is the Anunnaki have and did go ahead and introduce their own or alien DNA and genetically engineer the human race to work as a slave labor force to be able to acquire the resources that they need to be able to replenish their own planet.
If you want to do it right now, you can go into the detail about this string and
okay.
The facts.
What were the resources that they needed?
I can't remember right offhand. I know one of them was gold, and I'm not exactly sure how that falls into their technology, if their technology even exists.
Actually, it's one of the best conductors we have.
Right.
It's elemental.
Well, I know that. But aside from that, using it. But what I was saying is I did read an article at one time several years back talking about mapping the human genome. Actually breaking down DNA and finding out all the different little strands. And according to what the article was actually talking about is they were shocked and surprised that
there was a little string that said made by the
No.
In the USA I was made by the planetary man.
No.
Sorry,
right.
I just had to get that in there.
You
played that very well for me.
Thank you. All right. But no, basically, the article stated, shock of the researchers who were, you know, mapping this section of the genome, that the entire theory of evolution is one of not only random genetic mutation of DNA source code, but also that of change in the DNA affected by outside causes, like environment, needs of the creature to be able to survive in a given environment. If you believe in evolution and the adaptability of life, you can go ahead and actually, you know, make that leap of faith and, you know, believe in that theory. Well, according to the scientists who unlocked this certain part, there are certain sections of the genetic code that, looked at, you can find the predecessor to in the code still. All right. The human genetic code has the same exact information as that of an earthworm, as that of a chimpanzee. But there are developments beyond that, improvements, but you can trace those improvements back, genetically speaking. What the scientists found were several sections of genetic coding that had no predecessor, no evolutionary predecessor that they would have even spawned from or evolved from. And that would lend credence in some way to Sitchin's theory that Anunnaki had introduced outside code into our genetics to create us more than what we
or also that we came from God.
Previously we were.
Right. Our primal selves at that point.
Then wouldn't the Human Genome Project, I think that'd be illegal under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah. They could be putting a lot. Jack Valenti would be all over there.
All right. Well, talking about
well,
it in that
also, in Toby's defense, he's not trying to sell us this idea. This is just something he knows.
This is a lot of things that I've heard just offhanded. Now, it goes. A lot of the story that comes off the Sumerian tablets talk more about their interaction, their setting up of colonies on Earth, that they would leave individuals here to supervise humanity as it progressed and gathered the resources that they would need for every 3,300-year return of the planet Nibiru. And that eventually the planet itself, Nibiru, had become stable enough that they were able to leave the so-called colony behind, and that a lot of what I know about the second half of Sitchin's theory of why they left Earth is a little fuzzy.
The humans were becoming unruly,
harder to control.
Those bastards.
More intelligent.
Sounds like Stargate.
Sounds like us end users on Microsoft products.
Sounds like the American Revolution.
Actually, one of the funny things was is I was taking a look at some information about the creation of Stargate and the overall story, and a lot of the story was based off of a lot of Zachariah Sitchin's findings originally. They got, hey, cool story, and let's use it. Well, aside from that, I'd been talking to one of my friends about this whole, about astronomy and different things like that. And I always thought the idea of humans not being created through evolution, but created from an outside force such as alien intervention to be, well, interesting, needless to say. Just ancient architecture. You know, things that we had previous to now that existed that even modern science can't figure out how to do with the kind of accuracy that they did at that point. Yeah.
Well, if you're, I guess that's pretty much the three theories of descent of man, that pretty much if you're not an evolutionist, you usually fall into either the creationist or, you know, seeding theory of aliens coming. And I think it's interesting that there's a lot of evidence of that both the seeding and the creation camps claim as evidence for their theories of technologies that have recently been found, like ancient technologies, things that date back to a couple thousand years ago,
that they shouldn't have had back then.
Right.
A technology that was suddenly introduced and then disappeared. For example, the pyramids.
Pyramids. The Greeks had batteries. Mm-hmm. You know, just odd things like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Sphinx was made when so far, so long ago that Africa, well, that Egypt was wet.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, they go ahead and they date the Sphinx compared to the surrounding area. And the Sphinx was supposed to be created, what, 10,000 years before the pyramids were even erected?
Oh,
according
yeah,
to their
no, I think
dating
it was more like 30,000.
Yeah, I mean, some insane amount. You know, just different things like this. And, you know, it's hard to believe in one theory or another. But I had been talking, like I said, to a friend of mine who had worked for the government in missile research. And he worked primarily with...
All right, we're going to have to cut this portion of the show out. We can't...
Well, actually... just one thing on the whole the thing. That I went to a... really short interjection. Really short.
Okay.
This is a little thing on the whole evolution of man. Is Mrs. Leakey just found not too long ago, actually about 5 years ago,
Australopithecus or
Kenyanthropodocus, flat-faced man from Kenya, which actually has incredibly similar features as we do. So that was 63 million years ago. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, 3.5 million years ago. That's about the same time as Lucy, mm-hmm. which, if you all are familiar with that, very ape-like.
Ape girl, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's had very fair features, didn't have a sagittal crest, flat face. Actually, you see people that you would look at them and you couldn't tell them a difference.
Right.
From... Kenyanthropodocus 3.5 million years ago.
Right.
Very interesting thing. So there's this whole new genetic line.
Right. And I mean, just the simple fact that at any one given point in time, anywhere from one, you know, a million years ago to, you know, several million years ago, there was at least 2 to 3 hominid species coexisting. It just happens that...
Well, it may not coexisting, but existing.
Right now, the
time.
Missile guy, is this going to get us in trouble?
Oh, no, the missile guy is not going to get
funny.
Us in trouble. We're
well,
talking...
the missile guy wasn't supposed to tell our guy.
We got to wrap it up here. So.
Okay, well, basically, the way it played out, I was talking to missile guy. Missile guy, back several years before, had been talking to an individual of some standing in the U.S. government. And this individual says that, yes, both the Navy and the Air Force, you know, have been tracking a large planetary object inbound for the last 20 years. And that we just haven't told anyone yet because we're not sure what the hell to make of it.
Isn't, like, public sector or private sector, you know, satellites or telescopes as... pretty much as sophisticated as the government's? I don't know.
Yeah, actually, if it was that inbound or that close, we should be able to pick it up.
Well, here's where I'll jump in. And I told Pestilence about this, and he knew about it, too. Remember around 1997?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here. It's supposed to be coming from where? 2005 to 2033 is when the planet's supposed to be coming.
2005 to 2033.
Is when it's supposed to be coming back towards our orbit. Okay.
Wait, in between 2005 to 2033?
Yeah.
That's about splits, not quite, 2012?
About 2012, yeah. My calendar.
Well, hold on. Also, do you remember in 1997, the news story that only lasted for about 3 days? It said, attention, we have found an asteroid that will be coming inbound 500 miles off the planet in 2033. Next day, they said, oh, wait, we're wrong. It's 13,000 miles.
Interesting.
And then after that, they're like, wait, never mind. It's not even coming close to us. And then those two movies came out.
Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Yeah.
The whole meteor craze went on. It's like they already had the movies ready for the news story.
It's like now all the army, very all, the, Bell. All the army.
So that's are, actually more of like a propaganda thing that.
Yeah, but what's
Hollywood
the
put out.
What's the purpose of the propaganda to make us fear? I mean,
yeah,
I don't
it,
understand
it
what
brings.
The,
it brings reality to the story.
Yeah, but what's then, the goal of the conspiracy?
But then,
to make us afraid
Discovery,
or to
but,
make us open
then,
or what?
But then on the Discovery Channel, all they've shown for our space stuff in the last year and a half is how to stop asteroids from impacting our planet.
Yeah, but.
I think that's I part think of some of the Bush plan of justification of the space
program.
Yeah, as well as space wars.
Right. Now, as an interesting side note, though, all right, in consideration of what you were talking about, civilian sector being able to have satellites that can actually be able to detect such things. Well, one. We've got one satellite in space that can detect such an object. That's called the Hubble Space Telescope. Guess where it points? Wherever NASA wants it to point. JPL basically has final control over where that bad boy points. Everything else that we have in orbit right now points at the planet, not outward.
What
the
is...
The only other pieces of equipment that we have that are ready and usable for deep space search are land-based telescopes, one, and two, another JPL project called SOHO, a satellite that was sent between, I believe it was Venus and Mercury, to be able to take a look, at our sun's corona and how sunstorms and sunspots form and develop and are created. Now, it's an interesting thing because several years ago, back in 97, yet again, during the whole meteor craze, SOHO was taking its pictures just fine. In fact, it was doing everything that JPL and NASA touted this particular satellite to do. It was recording weather patterns on the sun, how sunspots developed, and all these different kind of things. And then right after the meteor craze, not but by a couple of months, all of a sudden, the satellite went down. It mysteriously stopped transmitting for a span of exactly 8 hours. It came back on, and then again, several days later, it went down again for an approximate amount of time. Now, the photographs that were streamed live through the internet, the photographs both leading up to and after each downtime of that particular satellite had cropped sections pulled out of the photos, big black squares that NASA and JPL put up on their own photographs so you couldn't see what the hell was going on. All right? As far as I'm concerned, if such a planet does exist, if Nibiru is coming inbound and is supposed to be here anywhere between 2005 and 2033, 2012 for all those Mayan fanatics out there.
Woohoo! Thank you.
It's probably coming in sunward. And if you're using a land-based telescope, there's no way in hell that you're going to be able to see something, even of massive size, coming in earthbound from that direction.
What's the point of hiding it if we're going to have... You know, we're all going to see it like that soon.
All right.
Maybe they're trying to develop technology to keep hiding it.
We've got a lot of different things going on in the world right now. We have the concept of global unionization, while the globe right now and the cultures on it are trying to rip themselves apart. All right.
Goes back down to who can we hate?
Who can
you know,
we
if,
hate?
You know, the old outer world. You know, Twilight Zone episode or Outer Limits episode where the scientists of the world devised a way to fake an invasion from Mars to unify the world.
Ooh, Watchmen, same plot, excellent comic book.
Some people perfect opportunity right now.
I think there may be evidence that the September 11th attack may be previously planned as well.
Well, actually, what that could actually have done is, I was thinking about it, slowed down the economy. You know, it actually put, you know...
I think if it was a typical plan, it didn't work very well.
But what if we're supposed to all be gathering against them, wouldn't that be a more effective strategy if we knew they were coming? Wouldn't that be the way to get us all to unite against them?
Well, if popular conspiracy theories are correct, and there are secret societies like the Illuminati, and different groups like that, the New World Order, you know, 1,000 points of light, do you really think that
Freemasons, come on, got to give them the press.
Freemasons.
Thank you.
All right. You really think individuals like this, the people that control the things behind the scenes, do you think they're ignorant of what's going on? No. But then again, is it better to be on the losing side or on the right hand of the devil? So what do? You make it easier for them to come in.
All right. Two quick auxiliary questions. One, what's the 10th and 11th planet?
10th and 11th planet. 10th and 11th planet. 10th is our moon. The 11th was one of the moons of Jupiter.
All right. And two, what was the composition of the Earth before the this other moon came and crashed into it? Was it like all water, or was it?
Well, at that point, we were still boiling, smoldering mass of hot rock. Next thing, as far as I'm concerned, I've got to actually look at dates and actually read through a lot of the stuff to get all that correct. But one other thing that kind of helps tie this whole theory together for me. Anybody heard of the Dogon tribe of Africa?
Yes.
And they're...
There's a 160-year ritual?
Yeah, 160-year ritual, which revolves around Sirius A and B. Yeah. Binary star system that you can only see the one star, but until as of the late to mid-70s, you couldn't see the second one.
But they knew about it.
Yeah. And they knew about it for a long time. How do people like that get that knowledge? How do people like that be able to accurately map our solar system by painting it on cave walls? That information comes from somewhere.
If you really want to pull all your end-of-the-world theories together, there's the obvious reference in Revelation that the world will end. That point that Jesus keeps making over and over again is that when you see the temple rebuilt, for I believe it's the third temple, which will be the next one, in Jerusalem, then that will be the end of the world. And obviously that's what you hear on the news every day, is they're, you know, the Israelis are fighting to rebuild their temple. And there's another popular theory, I can't remember how it ties in exactly, but when the last person who witnessed the Holocaust dies, which appears to me to be somewhere in that 2033 time frame, then that's the end of the world. So I don't know. But of course, I have to make this point too. There was a book called
2012.
Yeah, well, the 2005, 2033, you know, 2012.
Also, there's a really interesting alignment around 2012 and around 2033 or 38, which the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars will all be on a nice little row. Not across the sky, as you keep getting, you know, say in the paper, oh, there's, you know, an alignment across the sky. No, this is one point you could look down them all and they'd all be blocking.
Yeah, and you know what the cool thing is you do the numerology out of the Bible itself, the creation of man and all that kind of really interesting stuff.
You're talking about Kabbalah or like numerology, you know, like European stuff?
The European numerology of the actual Bible. All right. You know the magic numbers. 7, the Holy Trinity. 6, imperfection, man, the beast. 12, justice. 4 or 40, change. All right. Well, if you do all the actual numerology going from the... going from Genesis and going actually through the generations. According to the Bible, the Earth has only existed for 40,000 years. Not 40,000 years, the entire 40,000 year cycle of the first half of the cycle is actually over 2033 or 2035, right around in that neighborhood.
Well, there's also some people that think that the Earth was created like at 9 a.m. in 2,000 years, 2,000 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stuff like that. From that kind of numerology. Right,
well, we must make the point that, you know, people have been predicting the end times ever since the beginning.
Right.
2000 and my favorite example, the book in 1988, or the book came out in like 1985 or whatever, 88 reasons that Jesus will come back in 1988. It was full of like all sorts of reasons. It's pretty funny.
Yes.
All right, we got to go to sleep here. At the end of now.
Yeah, it's nap time for one of us.
Well,
who will remain?
If we make it past 2033 or some 2040, then at least one good thing can be done, because we can get rid of a whole lot of rumors.
But there will be new ones by then, my friend.
All right. Why? Because the proliferation of talking about that this day, you know, this time is going to be the end, you know, just telling somebody else about it helps to change that date. And so that gives us even better feeling. Why? Because we did something that changed the course of the world. It's me, by proclaiming that the world is going to end, may actually change that and save all of our lives for possibly another day.
Now, I want to take the nihilist point of view on this. We're all screwed.
Well, you know, actually...
And that's it. In the now.
In Canadian theory, we're all dead.
JP saying, kick it with your homies real big time.
This is BR saying, in the long run, we are all dead.
Well, this is Pestilence. If VR's prediction doesn't come true, my plague will get you.
And this is Slip saying, I love this place. See you guys next month.